You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, good morning, good morning, good morning. You're walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. I do not have a voice. I tell you, there's something going around. Everybody I talk to, same thing. Doesn't matter what state I'm talking to them in, whether it's Maine, California, Kentucky, Oregon. There's just something that's going around. This has been a year, hasn't it? I have talked to people who's everyone from their themselves to their grandparents to their children to their babies keep getting this crud that's going around. It's like big this year. We had a big hit in around Thanksgiving and then another one around January. And then now this spring stuff that's going around. It's kind of crazy times. So bear with me as I kind of cough away. I'll try to hit the mute button if I can. Anyway, today, wow. So I hope you all had this fabulous Easter. And of course, we're still in the Easter octave, the Easter season, the Easter moment. But I wanted to discuss a little bit, take just a moment to talk about Easter itself and this last week and weekend. But I also want to talk to you today about a couple of articles that I came across in New York Times that are disturbing to me. And they might be disturbing to me for reasons that may not be readily apparent. They might. So I will talk to you about that. And also, because even though you may or may not be interested in the topic, it has a much deeper message. And the deeper message is about how do you rely on yourself? How do you take things that are just so overwhelming, so many things coming from so many different directions, and you think, hey, this is not pertinent in my life right now, and you kind of move on. You may have an opinion, you may not have an opinion, but it actually gets to you somewhere deeper because it challenges what you've learned in life. It challenges how you view the world. It challenges how you view yourself. The first one is an article called "My Daughter's Not Transgender, She's a Tomboy." That was from the New York Times. Now, I saw the title and I thought, wow, that's, you know, I thought pretty interesting. I wonder what this person has to say. It's an op-ed piece. So I went there. She's talking about her 7-year-old daughter. But as I read the article, it brought open some things that have been bothering me for years about how we look at normal human development. Everything from when you say that your child is on the autistic spectrum or ADHD or all these things about our kids, we take these snapshots and we make these global decisions about our children. And they're snapshots in human development where before we had instant diagnoses, like boom, snap a finger, you got a problem. I'm going to tell you what it is. We had human development and we had all kinds of people. They had all kinds of issues and they had all kinds of, they were on all kinds of places in this wave of human development. Some early, some late, some potty trained early, some, there was a big thing years ago, decades ago. People were potty training their children. They would say it's 6 months. Well, you don't potty train a child at 6 months. But what they would do is they'd each read each other very well, and they would have a little toilety thing, and they would do that. I'm sure there may have been some child potty trained at 6 months, but that's pretty young. Nobody would suggest you start potty training your child at 6 months. But this was a big thing, and young moms started to get all nervous because they could not get their children to potty train at 6 months. And this is way before the big boom of instant information and instant Instagram and Facebook and all these things that give you an instant snapshot into an unrealistic point of view. So I do want to get into that. Another article, which also brings up another part of our reality, down for where you live, what your backyard looks like, what your suburb looks like, what your home life looks like, and how that influences you. And the article is, "The chapel that survived September 11 attacks may not survive rent increase." This was also in the New York Times, in the New York section, where they're talking about things that are happening in their backyard. So I want to bring those two things together. But I want to look at your whole Easter, your Lent, and your Easter. When we aligned ourselves, I talked a lot about aligning yourself, even your divorce, even your troubles in your marriage, with the cross. And not in the way that you have to endure abuse. You do not have to endure abuse, but you can recognize abuse and you can see it from the outside as you watched Christ go through what he went through. But you also understand that the humiliation that Christ endured, because he didn't endure humiliation. And how many of you feel humiliated when your girlfriend or boyfriend breaks up with you, when you think you're on a road and you find out something devastating, or there's adultery, or there's pornography, or there's slothfulness, or there's something that is so painful to you, where you are living in a situation that becomes so damaging and humiliating to you that you don't know which way to turn and you think you should tough it up. One of the things I pointed out, and I want you to always remember, is that in the form of inspiration, in the form of nature, in the form of other human beings, in the form of the sacraments, in the form of people in your path, strangers in your path, God gives you a network, a safety net around you to help you. These are the angels that keep your foot from getting stubbed on a stone. They lift you up. They may not make you feel good, but they may say the words that will help you go the next step. They'll ring like a little bell in your head to be able to get up and go further, to until you finally know what it is you're supposed to do. So this is how Lent goes about. And by decreasing the distractions, by decreasing those things that you need to give up, you need to sacrifice during Lent, whether it's a fast, whether it's whatever it is, television, streaming something, Facebook, too much on your phone, too much texting, too much reliance on other things. No matter what you're fasting from, your own habits, it gives you openness to be able to simplify. All that stuff takes away, so your life becomes more simple. And when you're more simple, you're more apt to hear the voice of God that's whispering to you. That's a very important thing. So we went through that. And then in the preparation of all the ups and the downs, the adulation, the being greater, just everyone just so on board with this new king, calling him a king, bowing down to him, basically elevating him. And in such a snapshot, a snap of the fingers. Heard a woman yesterday talking about the snap of a finger, that she was going to get married, totally in love. And one afternoon, her fiance sells her, starts talking about their wedding and how great it's going to be. And in less than just a few hours later, he completely just walks out, breaks up. It's like getting dope slapped mentally for her. How hard that is to go from being the bride to being humiliated without even an explanation, completely dumped. And of course, that isn't the same as crucifixion. We still get to eat. We still get to think about it. We still get to talk about it. But these things are very painful and they hurt. And then we have the resurrection. We have those moments where before the resurrection, we don't see Christ. We have our Good Friday and our Holy Saturday. We don't see him. He's not around. We know he's there, but that shows us what it would be like without him. And then we have the resurrection. And the resurrection makes it all clear. But the resurrection is not only, and I don't want to say only, like that's small or insignificant. It's obviously the cornerstone of our faith and our religion. But he rose from the dead, and he didn't, not to prove necessarily, but he rose from the dead. What he was saying was truth, but is also an example to us. Again, he died for our sins. And part of that dying for our sins is to give us hope. And part of that hope is to know that nothing, that we can always rise again, that we give, we have the opportunity over and over and over, that there is resurrection after a death, after feeling like you can't go on. There are people, old and young, who commit suicide because their boyfriends or girlfriends leave them. Oftentimes, it's more often a young man who just is crestfallen because the girlfriend that they're just so in love with at 16. There are teenagers out there who do that. And we all know that, but sometimes we forget, but it does happen. But again, there's nothing after this. But we know that there is something after all of it, all the betrayals, all the hurts, all the confusions. That's why I want to get into these articles, because they are present day, and I want you to look at them from many layers. They're not just the issue of the day, the whole concept of your opinion around the transgender issue, or whether how it's being held, dealt with, or what's happening, but it goes to our very core of how we view life, what we think is fine and considerate versus not fine and inconsiderate. And also about this chapel that survived September 11th and why it may not exist anymore. Well, we're going to get to that and more. Dr. Michelle, you're walking with me on Dr. Michelle Live today. See you after the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You can email me at dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. You can also call 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. And I hope it doesn't sound like I'm barking at you, because I feel like I'm barking right now. I have no ability to have an inflection in my voice. So we'll just carry on here with the sudden changes in weather, and it's been unseasonably wet in this neck of the woods. So we've had beautiful, beautiful, beautiful growth everywhere. I mean, flowers and everywhere, and greenery, and hillsides are just like, I mean, I saw rolling hills of yellow and white flowers, just, I mean, thick, where it looked like a big carpet. It was unbelievable. It's beautiful, but probably lots of molds and spores, and there's lots of weed, huge weeds growing up. So who knows what's going on, but it's affecting a lot of people, young and old, and people all over. Spoke to someone in Oregon the other day, and they're having their big issues. Their whole family is, and someone out in Kentucky the same way, someone out in Maine the same way. So it's all over. So just take care of yourselves out there. Plenty of fluids always. And always remember too, now that I'm saying that, before we begin our show, we always put out there that this is not meant to be any kind of this meaning of the program. I do not give medical advice. I give you my opinion from years of being in the medical field, the psychiatric field, just scouring everyday articles, both journal articles and the popular press, as well as women's magazines and men's magazines and everything out there. I just kind of a student of culture, a student of any kind of thing that has to do with health, nutrition, psychiatry. this is what I do. So I put this together in my opinion and put it out there for you, not just on a level of psychiatry or medicine, but you're certainly welcome to email me anytime, DM live at breadboxmedia.com or call 573-4BREAD-4. I have lots of people who ask me questions about their medication. I will always refer them back to their own physician, because you never want to just stop something abruptly because you could create more problems. But you also have the right to rethink your medications. Do you really need them? Do you not need them? Are you able to wean off them? Weaning off of them will give you much more success than abruptly stopping them. And abruptly stopping them could be downright dangerous. If you have something, let's say a benzodiazepine, something like a Valium or a Klonopin or a Xanax or something like that, and you stop just cold turkey after a long period of time, you could throw yourself into a seizure, because they also act to suppress the seizure threshold. So there's all these different things that you want to be very, very careful that you don't take matters into your own hands just by something you hear. I have myself, I can be prone to any old fad that comes along myself where, oh, you don't need this. You need this vitamin, or you need this food. And in reality, we need a balance in our lives. And there are those people who are, our medical world can give us great things. It can also be very overused. So I don't know where you fit in that spectrum, but you can know. You can get those little red flags that come up, or those little gut feelings you have, or maybe your family's telling you something that you just really think, yeah, you know, I really better see about fine tuning this, or maybe I do need a medication. Maybe it's something physical. And sometimes it comes out emotionally. I've told you this year after year, something like depression can have such a multitude of factors, from where you are planted on the earth with a seasonal affective disorder, or a circadian rhythm problem because you've gone through time zones, or you could have a chronic disease, physical disease, or you could have something that just is coming up very slowly. You have no idea, blood sugar problem that's not even evident. Maybe you're not diabetic, but you have a blood sugar problem, and that can cause you to, I've known people who drink on an empty stomach one diet soda, and they're sweating and they're anxious and they're scared. They're going into almost a full-fledged panic attack, but not a real panic attack, but just they're scared. They're feelings of impending doom. The artificial sweetener, we're on an aside, of course, the artificial sweetener in the diet Coke or the diet soda tricks their body into thinking they just had sugar. They get an insulin spike, and then they get a rapid bottoming out, and their blood sugar drops, and they are suffering from low blood sugar, and they don't even know it. And also, so the whole point is that you look at that as a snapshot. Oh my gosh, you're just filled with anxiety. Well, maybe it's the diet. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it's a thyroid. So you really need look at yourself holistically on every front. Okay. So that's just my little public service announcement for the morning. So my goal in all of this is to look at building up strength of character, look at building up a holistic viewpoint, so you are whole and healthy, and so that you can find your place on this earth with as much wholeness, with much, as much openness, and as much ability to allow your heart, your head, your gut, your spirit, everything to work as friends, to work in unison, to work together instead of against each other. And sometimes we get fed something that we react to in our culture. Something. We don't like it. We don't know why we don't like it. We know something's wrong. And then we tend to react, and then we react, and we don't really have good reasoning, but we just know something's wrong. And then we start hearing it over and over, and we acquiesce to it. It is a known way of getting something done. When I first came back into the path, and we're going to go to this article. When I first came back into the Catholic Church, I met this fabulous priest. He was my angel, Father Pat. Amazing, is now deceased. But he was telling me about the early days. He was a Monsignor when I met him, but in the early days where he was located, that he was on a lot of it was like in the 50s or 60s. And the Catholic Church was very involved in a lot of asked to be involved in some of the political ideas and some of the political thoughts. And they were looking at capital punishment and abortion. And I remember him telling me this story, and the point he made was quite interesting. And what he said was this, is that as they're talking about all this, abortion is before the 1970s, and capital punishment in the state that he was in, the state in the United States he was in, the politicians told them, no matter which way we go, there will be an uproar. But this is how it works for the masses. Mass meaning the mass of people, our constituents. There will be an uproar no matter which way we go. And you'll hear it for a while, but other things will come in and fill up attention. And pretty soon it'll die down. It becomes yesterday's news. And we just march forward with what we think is best. So this is what happens. This is another aside. I'm getting on these asides. It must be my cold. During the days where you'd go down among the stacks in colleges, you know, see all the books and all that. And I used to love to take breaks and look at all the different books down in the basements, because they always had real unusual things. And I saw this entire thing of all our presidents and all their little speeches. And I happened to pick up one, and I happened to see, and their writings. And I happened to see one from Richard Nixon, I think it was. I can't remember. One of the presidents before abortion, while they were still thinking about it. And I was able to see his notes and his memos about how he was really torn by the subject, about how he thought, especially for the military, that maybe that was going to be okay, but that he worried that one day that everyone would just think of it as normal. Well, you know, he has no way to see it now, but whichever president it was that was talking about it, but they do see it as normal. So keep that in mind as we look at this article. So I'm going to start this article now, and I'm going to read it as it is. It's kind of a cool article, but then I want to talk about what this means for you, no matter where you fall on any of the thoughts here. It says, my daughter is not transgender. She's a tomboy. It's by Lisa Celine Davis. I just wanted to check, the teacher said. Your child wants to be called a boy, right? Or is she a boy that wants to be called a girl? Which is it again? I cocked my head. I'm used to correcting strangers who mistake my 7-year-old daughter for a boy 100% of the time. In fact, I love correcting them, making them reconsider their perceptions of what a girl looks like. But my daughter had been attending the after-school program where this woman taught for 6 months. She's a girl, I said. The woman looked unconvinced. Really? She's a girl. And you can refer to her as a girl? Now, we're talking about a 7-year-old, remember. We're going to finish this on the other side of the break. We only have, I could probably just read a little bit more. Later, when I relayed this conversation to my daughter, she said, more girls should look like this so it's more popular so grown-ups won't be so confused. Thank you, 7-year-old daughter. I mean, that's what a beautiful thing for her to say. I'm going to read that sentence to you once again. This little girl, 7. Now, remember, she's 7. She's not 18. She's 7. More girls should look like this so it's more popular so grown-ups won't be so confused. A 7-year-old is saying how confused grown-ups are. Grown-ups should not be confused. Grown-ups should be grown up, right? They should be the beacons in the road. But I'm not going to editorialize too much more when we come back, and we'll finish up this article and we'll get to the real meat of the subject. On the other side of the break, you're welcome to call in anytime you'd like.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Redbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You're welcome to call and weigh in anytime, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can also email DM live at breadboxmedia.com, and you can also text. So I'm reading you this for a reason. Not only, no matter where you come down on this issue, as far as your own thoughts, your own confusions, I want to point out some very important things about you as a human being, and you as a person who lives on this earth, and how easy it is for us just to get so, I mean, really don't even think about it, because you'll be laying on your back drooling. If you think about in any given day, all the issues, just drive for an hour, put on your talk radio or put on any radio, I don't care what it is. And it just starts to get to be a mass of emotional confusion. It's like an emotional Tower of Babel. Things are moving so quickly. And they're asking you to change everything that you know inside yourself. And there are some realities in life that that do need fixing. Yes, absolutely. But there's something wrong. We react quickly. We don't think of the long-term consequences, nor do we see the fullness of it. We react on the periphery. We react on the tip of the iceberg. We don't see the whole iceberg. So let's take a look at this. I know that sounds rather general. So let me get back to this article. So I want to go back to when she says, when she talks about her little daughter saying that more girls should look like this so it's more popular, so grown-ups won't be so confused. Now remember, this little girl is 7. My daughter wears track pants and t-shirts. She has shaggy short hair. The look she requested from the hairdresser was Luke Skywalker in episode 4. Most, but not all, of her friends are boys. She is sporty and strong, incredibly sweet, and a girl. And yet she is asked by the pediatrician, by her teachers, by people who have known her for many years, if she feels like or wants to be called or wants to be a boy. You know what? I have to interrupt myself. I'm so sorry. But this blows my mind. The girl is 7. 7. Natural human development that you learn about medical school 101. Maybe you don't learn about it that way anymore. Maybe it's all been rewritten. But natural human development, you learn about it in college, human development 101. Again, maybe that's all been rewritten, but I learned it. Is that when they look at humans throughout just one generation after another, there are certain stages they go through. There's times where you want to marry your best friend. You don't know anything about sexuality. You want to marry your mother. Are we going to start changing that to see if that's possible? You want to marry your father. You want to marry the nun who's your teacher. You don't understand anything. You just really like them a lot, or you're very close to them, and you just somehow see the child somehow sees that the closest thing out there seems to be mom and dad, and they're married. Or you know, someone, little kids taunt each other. Oh, you love that rock so much, you want to marry it? You know, if we really took that seriously, oh, they want to marry a rock. Maybe we better like nurture that. And I know it's not that simple, but yet we're taking things to an extreme that are unnatural and confusing. And the little kids have more clarity than we do. But they, do you really need to ask a child something they're not equipped for? They're not equipped to answer these questions. Just like a little five-year-old who gets molested as they grow up. And I've seen many, many, many human beings, adults, 40, 50 years old, successful with children, who think that they were partners in a homosexual relationship because they were molested by an adult when they were five. Their little five-year-old brains can't process this stuff. Your brains are only so much. You're not developed. You don't have what you need. We never stop developing, but there's a point where we just don't have that. That's why we don't. We think it's insane when someone lets their nine-year-old, as they did a while back, pilot an airplane. She crashed it. She died. This was like decades ago. But when those things happen, yes, little kids can do things and they seem very adult. They don't have the problem-solving skills. They don't have the background, and their brains are not physically able. You could not take a five-year-old and have a baby. Her body is not developed. It's not able to do that. It is not developed. It would kill her, and she can't conceive. There's a reason. They're not developed. Their brains are no different. Their emotions are no different. Their perception of the world is no different. It's not developed. And if you are asking a seven-year-old, for the rest of your life, do you want to be a boy? And you're a girl. That is not a question. I wanted to be a gypsy. That's what I wanted to be. And I wanted to be a nun. And I wanted to be a fireman. I wanted to be a cowboy. I wanted to be Jesus. Now, are you going to lock me away because I was angry at like seven, that I was not going to be able to be Jesus because I was a girl? Now, does that mean I wanted to be a boy because I knew there was going to be a second coming? Seriously, I'm just telling you how my little brain worked. And I was very serious about this. There's going to be a second coming, and I was very angry that everyone said it had to be, that Jesus was going to be a boy when he came back. Now, does that mean I was just this angry feminist at five, or that I actually want to be a boy and should have changed my gender identity? I wanted to be Jesus. And I'm only saying this because it's as absurd as saying a little boy and I wanted to climb trees. I wanted to beat kids up. I used to beat up the little boys for making fun of my brother, who at that point was much more aligned with a girl than he was. Did turn out to be homosexual, but he wasn't transgender. He was a guy, but he was more in a more feminine role throughout his life than I was as a little child. And I was his protector. So what was I? I think I'm a girl. I'm a girl, girl. I'm a girly girl and I'm strong. You know, you can be all kinds of things, but all I'm saying is that if you're going to even give someone, because we know this has existed, they existed in Jesus's time. They exist now. People who really do, for whatever reason, we don't understand. There's a certain segment of the population that will always have there's different, we don't understand it completely. It's not necessarily in the genetics that we know explainable, but yes, they do feel like they are the wrong gender. And in days, decades previous, there've always been those people. And before there was ever any kind of way to change that, they suffered greatly. So I have great compassion for them, but they might know they feel a little differently, but you don't just take a seven-year-old and as an adult ask them, are you a boy? Because at any given age, are you a pirate? Yes, I'm a pirate. Do you really want to be Jesus? Yes, I want to be Jesus. And if you make a decision based on an answer from a six-year-old, what are we going to do? You're going to lock somebody away because they're a girl and they want to be Jesus? We have a lot of people in the mental ward who think they're Jesus because they do have a true delusion. But that's because they're 32 years old and they can't work because they really believe they're Jesus Christ, but they're non-functional and they can't feed themselves. Not because they're six and seven and eight and nine. and they begin to change over time. We have to watch the development of any given child. So really, I'm spending a lot of time because obviously I feel very passionate about this because I feel it's very sad. It can be very confusing. There are people who want to do the right thing, but they're, and a child will only do how their parent guides them. So this is a very difficult situation. This girl is seven and really the woman's making a very sweet, light article about, hey guys, back off. My little girl's quite a girl, but she wants to be Luke Skywalker right now. I don't blame her. Some people want to be Princess Leia. Some people don't want to be princesses. Some people want to be soccer players. That's just what they want. That's not their thing. So, all right. So I'm really kind of getting off here, but it really does get me because, again, this is an op-ed. This is someone who's very prominent. She's an op-ed writer for the New York Times, and her pediatricians, her daughter's pediatricians ask her, and her teachers ask her, and people who've known her daughter for, quote, many years, less than seven or seven, keep asking her what she wants to be called. Or do you feel like you're a boy? Do you want to be called a boy? Are you a boy? How confusing could that be to a child if all your adults in your life, including your doctor, are asking you what you want? I think that's a little excessive. That's my opinion. This is an op-ed piece, and I'm an op-ed person today. So, but anyway, the article is actually quite good, but we're going to get back to it on the other side of the break. If you'd like to weigh in, 573-4BREAD-4. And I hope we get into the Catholic chapel as well today. All right, I am your host. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. I am your host. We may not get to the historic chapel that is at the site of the World Trade Center. It's a very beautiful article that I really want to get to because I was there after 9/11 in New York, and something that's very dear to my heart. And the sad part for me is that things get glitzy and lost. There are many parts in the world where things happen that we don't allow them to get lost for a reason. You don't want to forget certain things because you need to be reminded. And so there are memorials and there are preservations of even atrocities so that those things don't get glossed over like they never happened. So I really want to get to that, but we might not get to it today. So let me finish this article. Now, let me say also, because it seems like even with this woman, because she's going to go on to say some things about her feelings about gender fluidity. And I know it's a big deal with everybody. I want to say that in my personal life and also in my professional life, I have known and know and many Catholics, transgender, homosexual, just all kinds of different variations, people with lots of confusions. I won't go into any more detail because I'm not quite sure if it might be too graphic. But and so we're all human beings, and everyone, and I've heard it many times enough and way before I was a physician to believe it. I know people who said, I knew when I was five, something was different, but I didn't know what, but I knew. So I believe that. I know it's true. You look back in the Bible, somewhere in the Bible, it even says people are born, you know, eunuchs and this and that and all different ways. Some people are more asexual. Some people are bisexual. Some people are homosexual. Some people have always had the feeling that they are the wrong sex, that something is off. There are some people who are born with two sets of genitals. Sometimes they don't even notice. They don't even know until they're scanned later. They have rudimentary tissue of the opposite sex right in their body. Lots of things happen in life. So we can't just judge. We have to love, period. That's all I'm going to say on that. But there's also then cultural confusion, which makes my head spin sometimes. All right, so here we go. So I'm going to finish this then. This idea that, and I guess I think what really got me was the idea that the little girl in a moment of amazingness said, you know, why the adults are so confused? Why can't I just be a girl? This is just me. And the idea that the pediatricians, her teachers, and people have known her for years, if she feels like or wants to be called or wants to be a boy. So in many ways, this is wonderful. It shows a much needed, she says as she continues on, Lisa Davis, as she continues on her op-ed piece about her daughter. She said, in many ways, this is wonderful. It shows a much needed sensitivity to gender nonconformity and transgender issues. It is considerate of adults to ask her in the beginning. I don't think it is myself necessarily. And I think it would be really irritating for a child to be constantly asked. And it would also give you a bit of a complex if you think you're just the, you know, like the, I used to love women pirates who dressed up as men in order to be a pirate. I love that. I loved it. I thought it was cool, but I think I would be really annoyed if I was dressing up all the time, or that's who I wanted to be at that moment. And someone kept asking me, but you want to be a boy? It's like, no, I want to be Anne Bonny. I want to be the pirate. I want to be whoever. She wanted to be Luke Skywalker. She wants to look like Luke Skywalker in one particular thing. Anyway, all right, I'm going to try to get through this article because I just get, I want to talk about each part of it. But when they continue to question her gender identity and are skeptical of her response, the message they send is that a girl cannot look or act like her and still be a girl. Now, again, we're talking about learned adults, pediatricians, teachers, and people, adults who've known her, quote, for years, and she's only seven. They continue to ask her. Her mom's saying they continue to ask her and are skeptical of her response. So again, imagine it's hard enough for someone to look at me cross-eyed like, oh, really, you're going to wear that? You know, or you like your hair that way? Any girl out there knows, any woman out there knows, all your mom had to do was say, you sure you want to wear that today? And you go change it because you know that that's something saying, oh my gosh, no, it doesn't look good. So we have a certain thing that we grow up with. So can you imagine being a little girl or a little boy and constantly, maybe a little boy likes his hair long for whatever reason, or mom likes their hair long, and they're being asked all the time, are you sure you're not a girl? You know, that's kind of, I would just think it would be very difficult as a child. Because they don't know anything different. They're just getting feedback from the adults in their life that is sending them mixed messages or weird messages. Like, you know, whatever you think you're telling me isn't right, kid. And I don't think that's good. Anyway, back to the article. And then it says, she is not gender nonconforming. She is gender role nonconforming. She does not fit into the mold that we adults who have increasingly eschewed millennia's old gender roles ourselves, as women work outside the home and men participate in the domestic sphere, still impose upon our children. Let alone, would boys really never wear pink? That's rhetorical. Pink was for decades considered a masculine color. Would girls naturally reject matchbox cars? Of course not. But if they show preferences for these things, we label them. Somehow we have broadened our awareness of and support for gender nonconformity. We've narrowed what we think a boy or a girl can look like and do. Let's be clear. If my daughter does begin to feel that the gender in her mind and the sex of her body don't match, I will be supportive. I will research puberty blockers and hormones. That's another subject. We'll get on that another day. I will listen to her and make decisions accordingly. But just as I did when she turned three and asked for a tie and a button down when she saw her dad's blazer, Her eyes rounded and she asked, and she said, "What is that?" as if she were seeing a double rainbow spread across the sky. She was in love with a look, the look that evolved. She moved from tie and blazer to daddy's stained t-shirts and pants, but it was always just been a look, even if it came with a rejection of princesses and a willingness to play family with both boys and girls as long as she could be the dog or the police officer. I want trans kids to feel free and safe enough to be who they are. I also want adults to have a fluid enough idea of gender roles that a 7-year-old girl can dress like a boy and not be asked by people who know her, not strangers, whether she is one. The message I want to send my daughters is this: you are an awesome girl for not giving in to pressure to be and look a certain way. I want her to be proud of being a girl. And she is starting to be. She is already vigilant about women's rights. She does not understand why they are separate men's and women's sports teams, why women learn less, why they don't run our country. She identifies as a tomboy because that's what some kids at school told her she was, though she has also said, "Why is it a tomboy?" When kids say she's in the wrong bathroom, she tells them, "I'm a girl." And invariably they say, "Oh, okay." The kids get it, but the grown-ups do not. While celebrating the diversity of sexual and gender identities, we also need to celebrate tomboys and other girls who fall outside the narrow confines of gender roles. Don't tell them that they're not girls. My daughter is happy with her body and comfortable with the way she looks, thousands of times happier and more comfortable than I am or ever have been. She is my hero, or rather my heroine. Now, we only have a couple of minutes left. 573-4BREAD-4, text or call. You can also email dmlive@breadboxmedia.com if you want to give a more in-depth reaction. We do not have to identify you. But this article is very multi-layered. And I think the take-home message here is this: we've reversed roles all over the place, and not just gender roles. We have reversed mental roles. We've reversed common sense roles. We have somehow, in a very short snapshot of time, have been asking people who know human development. A pediatrician knows human development. There are natural human development is that sexual play, physical sexual play that happens among little kids always, most always, is with the same sex when they're little. Why wouldn't it be? They don't know any different. They don't even hardly know it's sexual. This is pre-adolescence. And yet they're asking these kids to be gender identified before they even understand sexuality. There's something not quite right with that. There's also something, this woman, I hear her in so many different ways, that they're almost, you see that the child is elevated to the role of teacher, when really we should be centered enough to be open enough to allow a child to develop. And we watch them develop. And we help them with their struggles, and we take a look, and we let them do what's important in life. There's more to say about this. We're running out of time, but I think it's wonderful that this article is existing. I think it's also sad for us as a culture that we have to go back to the 1950s to start describing what a tomboy is, as if we never knew what it was. And yeah, we can look at why is it supposed to be a tomboy, but that it's okay for a child, without having to say you're either you're without making these huge giant statements that can affect the rest of their lives and pressuring them to make of a decision. And let's say that you ask if they want to go to war. You can't do that. So anyway, we've got a lot to talk about on this subject, but a lot more to talk about the heart, soul of ourselves, our culture, our children, our families. We will do that all the rest of this week. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. Please email me. See you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.